Welcome to the WP Builds Podcast, bringing you the latest news, interviews, and fun for the WordPress community. Now, welcome your host, Nathan Wrigley.
Hello there, and welcome once again to the WP Builds Podcast. You've reached episode number 444. Check it out, 444. Accessibility made easier. Natalie McLees on Aardvark for agencies and developers. It was published on Thursday, the 6th of November, 2025. My name's Nathan Wrigley, and I'll be having the interview with Natalie in a short while. But before then, a few bits of housekeeping. The first thing to mention, as I will be doing for the next few weeks, is that, well, you know it, Black Friday is around the corner. In the WordPress space, things hot up pretty quickly. By now, you're probably thinking about all of the different deals that you're going to line up, the different purchases that you're going to make, but maybe you're a little bit confused about where to look to find all those deals. If that's the case, I've got the answer. It is wpbuilds.com/black. Once more, wpbuilds.com/black. It's our dedicated Black Friday deals page. Over there, currently, we've got in the region of about 200 deals which have been sent to us. All of the deals are currently active. They will disappear from that page when they become inactive. But if you go there, there's a little button as you scroll down, and if you invoke the search and filter button, you'll be able to get into more detail. So, for example, organize things by category and price and percentage off and that kind of thing. So it's a real good place to go in the run-up to Black Friday. Bookmark it, wpbuilds.com/black. If you would like to add your deal to that particular page, so let's say you've got a plugin or a block or a theme or something like that, there is an add a deal button on that page. Click that and we will add your deal for free. That is, of course, how all the deals that are on there currently got there. If you would like to be pride of place and really featured on that page, you'll notice that there are some black cards at the top. They are our sponsored sections and they occupy a dedicated section at the top of the page. There are some buttons underneath each of the available cards, and if you would like to get your product or service really noticed in the run-up to the busyness of Black Friday, click on the button, fill out the form, and we will get you on that page in a spot really, really, really featuring you and whatever it is that you have to offer in the run-up to Black Friday. If you would like to have your product or service embedded into the podcast, and you're about to hear from a few companies that have done just that, head to our advertise page, wpbuilds.com/advertise, and we will make sure that people know about your product or service. We have a fairly large WordPress-specific audience, and they will certainly benefit from hearing about whatever it is that you have got going on. So there are three companies this week that have done that, and they have made the WP Builds podcast possible this week. The WP Builds podcast is brought to you today by GoDaddy Pro. GoDaddy Pro, the home of managed WordPress hosting that includes free domain, SSL, and 24/7 support. Bundle that with the Hub by GoDaddy Pro to unlock more free benefits to manage multiple sites in one place, invoice clients, and get 30% off new purchases. Find out more at go.me/WPBuilds. We're also helped this week by Bluehost. Bluehost, redefine your web hosting experience with Bluehost Cloud, managed WordPress hosting that comes with lightning-fast websites, 100% network uptime, and 24/7 priority support with Bluehost Cloud. The possibilities are out of this world. Experience it today at bluehost.com/cloud. And we're also joined by Omnisend. Omnisend, do you sell your stuff online? Then meet Omnisend. Yes, that Omnisend, the email and SMS tool that helps you make $73 for every dollar spent. The one that's so good, it's almost boring. Hate the excitement of roller coaster sales? Prefer a steady line going up? Well, try Omnisend today at omnisend.com. And sincere thanks go to GoDaddy Pro, Bluehost and Omnisend for their ongoing support of the WP Builds podcast. Join them if you like, wpbuilds.com/advertise. Okay, what have we got for you today? Well, today I'm chatting to Natalie McLees. Right back at the beginning of this podcast, so episode, 10 or something like that, I chatted to Natalie and her companion Nathan, what a great name, all about a different product. And today she's telling us all about a SaaS service called Aardvark. Aardvark is your one-stop shop for helping you understand what it is that you need to do on your WordPress website, or any other website for that matter, to make it more accessible. What the tool is intending to do is peel back the difficulty, make it so that people like you or I, who haven't dedicated a significant proportion of their time into figuring out accessibility, well, make it easier for them to understand. So we talk about Aardvark, why it was built, how it works, and also we talk about an English language version of accessibility guidelines, which Natalie has created to make it really easy for you to understand the complicated language in the accessibility space. Really interesting episode, and I hope that you enjoy it. I am joined on the podcast by Natalie McCleese. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Natalie was on the podcast, oh, like 400 years ago.
Yeah.
Or something like that. In fact, Natalie, I think you were possibly with your colleague Nathan. You might even have been the first interview that I ever did.
And, really?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I was using your Simply Schedule Appointments plugin, and because I was using it, it just felt like the perfect way to inaugurate doing interviews on the podcast. If you weren't the first, you were definitely the second. You were right at the beginning. So so you're back.
I'm back.
Yeah. Are you still following up with those things? Are the tools that you had back then, so Simply Schedule Appointments and things like that, are you still doing those?
We still have that, and we still have Draw Attention, which is our oldest plugin, which is 11 years old this month.
Wow. Yeah. You're a real old timer in the WordPress space. That's lovely. So I was lucky enough to bump into your colleague, Nathan, at WordCamp US just a few weeks ago, and he alerted me to the fact that, well, I don't know if you're doing this with Nathan. I'm kind of assuming that you are or are not. You're nodding currently, so you are.
Nathan and I are both partners in a couple of new ventures, but we're here today to talk about Aardvark.
So the intention today then is to talk about Natalie and Nathan's tool. There's kind of a few prongs to it, but broadly speaking, we could classify it, if we were to apply taxonomy to it, we'd call it accessibility, I guess. The first thing I'm going to do is read into the record the URL, and as I often do, is just say, pause this now. If you're at a computer, then pause it and go to the following URL. So go to aardvarkaccessibility.com. But there's one little quirk. The Aardvark, which normally has two A's, in this case has three A's. I kind of got intuitions as to why that might be. So it's aardvarkaccessibility.com, all as one word. The links will be in the show notes. And there will be another URL following later, which, well, I might as well just say that one now as well. So it's the same URL, but if you append to the end, wcag-plain-english, again, links into the show notes. Go and have a poke around there and then come back, and you'll be well-versed in what we're going to talk about today. So, Natalie, it's a tool about accessibility. Would you just lay out the groundwork about you and accessibility? Because I feel there's a few things online in the WordPress space that we kind of need to know that you know what you're doing in this arena. So just tell us about your history with WordPress, but more specifically with accessibility. How has it captured your attention? How have you kind of upskilled and, you know, just basically indoctrinate us with your chops regarding accessibility.
Okay, sure. Yeah, so I've been a developer forever. And in the year 2000, so 25 years ago, I had a job working at a university, and I was building websites for the chemistry department. And it was like the sites that would have the study notes and all of those kinds of things for the students, so they could prep for their exams. And a few weeks into the semester, I got a call from the Disability Services Office letting me know that some of the students couldn't use the sites I was building.
Oh.
And I had no idea what they were talking about.
Yeah.
Because I was like, what do you mean? These sites work perfectly fine. And they had to explain to me about accessibility and how some students couldn't use a mouse, some students couldn't see the screen, etc. And that I had to code the sites to work with that. So they gave me lots of training in how to do it, and all the students could use the sites. So happy ending for everybody. And then I took that knowledge with me to future jobs and was shocked and appalled at job after job where nobody was doing anything about accessibility, because I had kind of come to think of it as just how you did things. And at a lot of places, it wasn't. So I just became the de facto accessibility advocate at every agency, every startup, everywhere I went. I was always the one training my colleagues and trying to convince the managers that accessibility was something that we needed to do. So that's my history with accessibility. I've been doing it ever since.
Yeah. Okay. Is it a field which has changed a great deal? You know, obviously web design and development has changed a lot, but I don't know if accessibility has changed a lot. I know that, you know, the legislation in place, all of that is constantly in flux and what have you. But if you were to sort of drill down into the bits and pieces that you need to implement on a website, the basics through to the most complicated things, has it changed? Or does the knowledge that you acquired in, let's say, 2005, does it still broadly map to what you'd be doing in 2025?
In broad strokes, definitely. You know, the basic building blocks of the web, just HTML paragraph tags and link tags and things like that, are still the same. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the rules are still the same. But then other parts of it have changed, of course, because technology has changed. There's new browsers, new devices, all of that available. The web itself has changed. And I think people just as an audience have also changed. Like, our expectations of what a website can do in 2025 are very different from what we expected from a website in 2000. So there are some things that have moved on. And I hope they've gotten better. I hope that we're able to build websites that are more accommodating now than we could before. But sometimes things are so complex, it's actually pretty challenging to make sure that they're accessible.
I think the interesting thing from my perspective about the internet is how pervasive it's become. So in, let's say, 2005, I was doing very little online. You know, most of it was just entertainment, really. You know, I'd go to a news website or something like that. But fast forward 10 years, and now suddenly I'm starting to book things in my local environment through the web browser. I may be buying groceries through the web browser. I'm certainly able to buy, you know, more or less anything and have it shipped. And now, increasingly, with the advent of the mobile phone, it's almost everything. Banking, taxation, hospital appointments, doctor's appointments, really all the necessities mostly can be done online. And so whilst the bedrock of it, you know, the bits and pieces inside the HTML may not have changed, kind of feels like the necessity, both moral and, we may get into it, legal, is very much more the case now. You know, this is not something that can kind of be left behind. There wasn't really a question in there. I didn't know if you wanted to respond to that, though.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I find most frustrating about the lack of accessibility on the web, and general numbers are that somewhere around 95 to 98% of the internet is not accessible, is because of that ability that we have to do everything. We can interact with our government, we can do our banking, buy our groceries, we can do everything online. And that has potential to be so helpful to people who have disabilities, who maybe have a really difficult time going out to the grocery store or carrying home a big bag of groceries and getting them into the house. There's so much potential there to help those people. But then when we build those services and don't make them accessible, that potential doesn't get realized, and everybody is just as locked out as they were before. And I think that's really unfortunate.
Yeah, there's a curious sort of, I mean, it's often not thought of in those ways, but that's really curious, because the internet literally could be the single best invention ever for somebody, I don't know, who has issues with their sight, let's say, for example. You know, they may not be able to drive and go to the grocery store, but the internet suddenly provided an option to have your groceries delivered and so on and so forth. So dangled in front of everybody was this marvelous kind of carrot, the internet. Look what it could be made available. But then I suppose it's a little bit akin to, I don't know, coming to the public library in your wheelchair only to discover that actually, do you know what? We just took all the ramps away. Sorry. but there's no ramps. We just didn't get around to doing the ramps, so you're not coming in, which is just so peculiar when you think about it. I mean, one can understand how the internet, the pace of development and what have you, kind of got away with itself, and so, you know, satisfying the pixels on the page and making it so that sighted people and people with hearing could use it. You can kind of understand how that evolution happened, but in the year 2025, that retrofitting is kind of, I would say, de rigueur these days. Yeah. Anyway, there we go. So it's obviously very important to you. And let's go to the first URL that I mentioned earlier. So again, AAA aardvarkaccessibility.com. I'll just read the UVP at the top, if you like. So it says, find, fix, and monitor accessibility issues across every website you manage. And then this, I guess, sums it up perfectly. The following sentence, the accessibility testing tool designed for busy digital teams. So it sounds to me then like you've developed a tool which will help people who don't have the capacity, like you have managed to find the capacity, to upskill yourself in this area. Is that basically it? You've tried to build a tool which will help people who have been unable to keep up. You know, maybe they've got good at JavaScript and CSS, but the accessibility stuff left behind. Is that kind of what it is?
Yeah, developers, unfortunately, don't typically learn anything about accessibility as part of their training, and they're not even made aware that that's something that they need to be thinking about. So a lot of them go into their careers without that knowledge under their belt, and then later they find out, oh, I'm supposed to be making all of these things accessible, but nobody ever told me how to do that. So that's where Aardvark can come in, is we can help you learn how to build accessible websites. You can get, our target audience is mainly web developers and freelancers and small web agencies who are building sites for clients. You can get all of the client sites loaded in there. It will run automatic scans and identify issues, and then also walk you through the manual testing part. So there's quite a lot of tools on the market that will do the automated accessibility testing part, but that can only test for between 20 to 30% of the accessibility issues on a site. The rest of them have to be found through manual testing. And so we'll help guide you through and figure out how to do that manual testing so that you can identify issues on your site, hopefully before it's launched, before it impacts any users. And we'll walk you through also how to get it fixed.
So just to be clear then, we're dealing with a SaaS platform. So it's software as a service. It's available. You know, you don't need a WordPress install to make this happen. You subscribe in some way. We can get onto all of that in a minute. And then in the dashboard, you would, allocate the URLs that you've got, the latest, greatest project that you've been working on. You can put the staging environment URL in there. And then click go, I'm guessing. And then your tool will go out and discover some of the, well, how does it begin, actually? That's interesting. Do we go for low-hanging fruit first, the interesting, easy stuff that there is to fix? Or do you just throw the whole gamut at us and, you know, present us with the red screen of death that kind of indicates, oh, we've got a lot of work to do?
Yeah, well, you can do it either way. So by default, a free account just lets you scan one page, which should be pretty manageable if you want to dive in there and start doing fixes. And then you can add all of your pages at once. If you want to go ahead and do that and get a complete picture, you definitely can. Or you could slowly add more pages of the site over time and work on, you know, get the first 10 pages in good shape and then add 10 more. And I will say, like, especially since I think a lot of the audience will be familiar with WordPress, if you have, for example, a site where you're a really active blogger and you have 1,000 blog posts, there's really diminishing returns from scanning more and more of those blog posts. They're all using the same template.
Yeah.
So you don't need to scan. If you've got to 1,000 blog posts, you don't need to scan 1,000 blog posts, around 10%. Generally, if you've got, you know, a WooCommerce store with a bunch of products, scan about 10% of them, a bunch of blog posts, about 10% of them. That's all you have to do. And you can swap out which ones those are from time to time to catch any issues that might be in the content itself, like you added an image and forgot alt text, for example. But yeah, you don't have to scan every single URL.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Because obviously, you know, for example, if, I don't know, maybe there's something that comes up with the navigation on the very first scan. I guess if you fix that, in whichever, you know, you could be using a page builder, you could be using Gutenberg or whatever. If you fix it once, hopefully you've kind of fixed it across the board. So
exactly.
That one can kind of be ignored, but the blog posts themselves with the images and so on. So what is the measure of, how to describe it? What level of WCAG guidelines are you going in at here? Because obviously, there are some things which it's essential to have. There are some kind of nice to have. There are some things which may even be kind of like in WCAG's future. I'm kind of interested to know where you pitch this, because accessibility, retrofitting accessibility into a website always feels like a journey, not really a destination. You know, it's kind of hard to imagine that you'll ever get there, but making a start at least gets you through the initial hurdle and you begin. So where do you pitch it? What level are you of WCAG are you using to give your data back to me, the client?
Yeah, so we're using the most current version of WCAG that is finalized, which is WCAG 2.2 AA.
Yep.
Is what we use on the site. And most of the accessibility laws around the world are related to WCAG AA. So that's a pretty basically accepted standard of what we mean when we say a website is accessible, is that it meets 2.1 AA. In reality, that does not mean that your site is 100% accessible. There's no such thing. There will always be some kind of barrier on a site to someone. And the goal is to just reduce those number of barriers as much as you can.
And let's say, for example, that I go in and let's imagine that I've got a very simple website, just five or six pages, simple brochure thing. And you've given me five or six suggestions. Does the tool enable me to kind of like, for want of a better word, bookmark, let's go with that, kind of say, okay, I'm going to tackle this one today, but I want to be in the back of my mind, inside of the tool, I want to know that those four things that I haven't touched are still available for me. In other words, is there a way that I, like a checklist, can I go through and sort of say, okay, I've got that one, tick, right, done, move on, then come back another day, a week? Because you're not going to sit down and do like 6 weeks of accessibility. You've got to be doing the work, the other work, to keep the devil from the door, if you know what I mean. So can we have that approach? Can we go back in and tick things off and so on?
Yeah. So you can assign issues. So if you want to assign them to yourself or to someone else on your team, you
can assign them, but
you can also keep them unassigned. So if you want to just keep a backlog that's not assigned to anybody, you can definitely do that in there. And you do have the ability to mark them as fixed and then they'll disappear. You can have just your list of what the open issues are. You can go see the ones that are pending. And when you say in Aardvark that something is fixed, we don't just take your word for it. It will get marked as pending. And if it was an issue found in an automated scan, Aardvark will automatically double check it next time it runs to confirm that it was indeed fixed. If it wasn't, it will reopen it and send it back to you. And if it was an issue that was found manually, like somebody was manually testing the site and found the issue will go back to the person who found it to confirm that it was fixed manually.
Okay, so there's a couple of things that have come out of what you've said just there. So the first thing was, you've obviously got some sort of permissions model in there. So you can assign various different team members. So that could be, I guess, if you're working at an agency, it could be, I don't know, developer X over there. But also, presumably, you could onboard some some accessibility consultant or somebody who maybe you're just helicoptering in to do work on this website. You could assign them inside the tool and give them the tasks and what have you. Firstly, have I got that right? Permissions are all kind of built in and you can assign things to various other people.
Yeah. And we have roles that have permission to do things. So like a developer role, for example, can say that they've marked something as fixed, but they can't confirm the fix because developers are not to be trusted. So the accessibility tester is the one who can confirm the fix and close an issue.
Okay, thank you. And then the other thing you mentioned, you sort of seem to draw a distinction between an automated thing and a human thing. So the automated thing, I'm guessing the tool itself will create those, let's call them tasks, I don't know actually what you call them, but it will create those tasks. What's the human bit then? So presumably I can go in and if I spot something, because I'm bright enough to know that there's something, I can add that in, okay, this is fixed. So in other words, it's like the to-do list is a bit of human and the tool itself.
Yeah, they're mixed together, and you can tell it will say, we call them issues. So each issue will say it was either found in a scan and on what date, or it was found by a person and on what date.
Okay. So, got it. So first of all, how confident are you in the reliability of your automated bits and pieces? And what's the sort of technology that you've got going on in the background there? In the world that we live in now, the word AI just pops up in all sorts of interesting and curious places. So I'm guessing there might be some bit of that in it, but I don't know, maybe not, maybe you're doing something slightly different. What's going on? How can we be safe in the knowledge that what you're telling us needs doing does in fact need doing?
Yeah, so under the hood we are using a package called PALI that I think a lot of people in the accessibility space will be familiar with. It's PA11Y, and it helps you to build automated scanners. And it has different engines that run under the hood. And so we have three of them. PALI automatically comes with ACTS from Dequeue. And HTML Code Sniffer from, I think it's Squiz Labs, makes that one. So we have those two. And then we recently built our own, we incorporated IBM's Equal Access Accessibility Checker into it as well. So we have those three different engines that are available. And then we did just recently release our first AI feature. So those checkers, they're all just JavaScript. So there's no magic there. It's just JavaScript. One thing that all of the checkers kind of struggle with is color contrast issues. When you have used any kind of opacity, a background gradient, a background image, they can never tell if the text has sufficient contrast with the background. And on some websites, because of their design, people would run a scan and have literally thousands of color contrast issues flagged. And it was, they would be marked that this needs manual review. The tool wasn't saying this is an issue, but it was saying you have to go manually check this. So we built an AI tool that will do that checking for you and close a bunch of those issues. So it will check, it samples points around the text, because every single pixel of text has to be sufficient contrast with the background. If even like one letter of your text doesn't have enough contrast, it needs to fail. So our AI checker will check that for you and close a whole bunch of those false positives and save you a lot of time.
Okay, great. Yeah, that's really curious how you've done that. That's interesting. Okay, so let's say, for example, I've got my 5-page website and you've highlighted 10 different things. How do you display to me that the things need to be done? So, you know, I can imagine a checklist. So there's some text which tells me that there's something that needs to happen. But I'm curious as to how you might show me, for example, where that is on the page or where that resides in the DOM. So just describe the different ways that you can see and get your hands dirty in it. And then in a minute, we'll move on to suggestions for actually how to improve things. But how do you actually tell us where to go looking for the problem?
Yeah, so we have a couple of ways of doing that. So first we have like what we call our text list. So it's just your list of all of your issues. Yep. And each one has a screenshot on it with a red highlight drawn around the issue that has an issue, that has a problem. So for people who can see the interface, they can obviously identify it that way. We also provide the HTML selector. And we even have a little snippet of JavaScript that you can go and paste into your console when you're looking at that page in the browser, and it will go to that element and highlight it. And then we also have a completely separate visual mode that will load up your website in the browser, just like it would look if somebody were visiting, and it puts little markers everywhere on the page that there's an issue. Oh,
that's neat, yeah.
And then you can click those to get more information about what the issues are.
Oh, okay. So I don't know, I'm going to my homepage or something like that, and there's several different markers on the page, and I go and click on those and I get the information about the whatever it is that I'm worried about. Okay, you've really run the gamut there. That's interesting. And I think many of those would be immediately obvious. Although we can't see them, we're an audio podcast, I think we can gauge exactly what you've done there. That's great. Okay, so we've gone through the alerting piece. We've gone through the, if you like, you're on the naughty step now because you've got all these problems with your website. What I want to know, because of my capabilities here, is how do I even fix these things? So it's all very well being told, here's a problem, here's another one, look, and here's another one. And 15 items later, I'm starting to feel terrible about myself. How do you alert us to how to go about fixing things? So ignore the WordPress side of things. Just let's imagine we're looking at the DOM. What do you do? How do you tell us how to remediate the problems?
Yeah, so every single one of our issues has a little section at the top of the page that will tell you, explain what this issue is and why it's a problem so that you understand that, like which groups is this problem impacting. And then we have suggestions for how to fix it. And that information has all been written by hand by me.
So in just like in plain, like, you know, prose, basically.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yes.
That's great.
So very simple instructions on here's what this means, here's who it impacts, and here's how to fix it. And then if you need more information, we link out to our resource, WCAG in Plain English.
Do you know, we'll come to that in a minute. Do you know, you've just said something, and you may not realize how profound it was, but you've the bit that's there is you've described who, I can't remember exactly what you said, but how it impacts people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the missing bit of all this jigsaw puzzle, isn't it? If you have perfect, I'm doing air quotes, if you have perfect sight, it will be very, very, very hard for you to truly ever know. Like you might have this sort of academic knowledge in the back of your head, oh, that's going to be an accessibility problem, but you won't really know. And so having it pointed out, like here's the list of people who would find this difficult, I think that's really powerful. Like morally, it helps you to sort of get there, you know, to understand who it's impacting. But also on a case-by-case basis, you pointing out who these people are and, you know, in what ways they will get a poorer experience. So I don't know if you've ever dwelled on that, but that feels like a bit of a secret sauce that you've got there. That's fascinating.
Yeah, I think that part of accessibility education is actually really important because I feel like otherwise accessibility professionals just feel like cops, like yelling at everyone all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think if you can help people understand, like, here's the actual impact of what you're doing, it makes the why so much easier to understand. And then you don't feel like somebody's just yelling at you to do something and you don't know exactly why.
Yeah, so I'm thinking of two other fields which have like a similar kind of retrofitting to your website feel to them, and they are SEO and performance. And so, you know, you go through a series of automated tests and you figure out, oh, terrible SEO on this website. And you do the same thing for performance. Oh, terrible performance in this website. But there's really no moral bit there. There's just something that you need to do because, I don't know, you need to be more productive. You need to have a quicker website so that you do better in Google so you make more money. There's no moral component. You know, if your website is slow, you'll probably, I don't know, not do quite as well in the SERPs. Maybe it'll, you know, tick people off for a little while. But you're not probably going to exclude people from your website. So it really is unique in that regard. And you spelling it out in that little modal or whatever it is that you've got in there, I think that's really important. You know, you say how this affects the people. That's fascinating. I'm really pleased that you said that. That's a really cool bit of the tool, I think. Okay, so then how do you... So do you then explain literally, step by step, what you might do to improve it? Because I guess if you're handwriting these examples, you can't exactly handwrite it for the exact situation that's on the website because every website is going to be different. Is it more generic or, yeah, how does that work?
Yeah, it's a little bit different from issue to issue because some of them are very straightforward. Like if you have an image that's missing alt text, that's very straightforward. And hopefully you're using WordPress or another tool that makes it very simple to go in and just add that alt text to the image. Others are a little trickier, like when you start to get into interactivity, things like tabs and accordions.
Okay, yeah.
It gets a little bit trickier. So the best I can do there is kind of give you an example of what this should look like, what the HTML markup should look like, and how it should behave, because that's another thing a lot of developers aren't aware of, because they themselves are often can use a mouse and a keyboard with no problem. They're not even aware of all of the keyboard interactions that a keyboard user is going to expect to be there. And so just to make them aware of what those are, here's how this should work. Here's what the HTML should look like. Here are the interactions that it should support. You should be able to press the space bar to activate this, for example, is something that gets missed a lot. And we just explain like how that should look and how it should work. So we can't give a specific fix in some
cases. Yeah. I wondered actually if WordPress gets in the way a lot, because if you're just writing, I don't know, JavaScript, CSS, HTML, maybe a bit of PHP in the background, but if you didn't have a CMS and you were creating your own DOM in effect, you really have the capacity to get this right perfectly. I mean, you know, your suggestions could be implemented fairly straightforwardly, but in the modern era where everybody's using, I don't know, a tool in WordPress, they've got a plugin which, I don't know, adds a tab block so that it you can have tabs by dropping in a block. You've got a page builder. Goodness knows in the future what we're going to be doing with AI and what have you. So I wondered what your thoughts were, whether something like WordPress actually messes up or models up the canvas to some extent. Again, that's a very, it's a not very formulated question, but do you understand kind of where I'm going with that?
Yeah. And, you know, for WordPress core and things like Gutenberg blocks, there is the WordPress accessibility team who are trying to go in there and ensure that if you're using some kind of Gutenberg block, that it is going to be accessible. If there's a problem and it's not, then you can file a ticket and somebody will get to that at some point. Obviously, there's a lot of them, so it might take a while. But and then if you're using, you know, a different page builder or a plugin or some other kind of tool, and you come across that their tool is actually not accessible, I'm a huge fan of filing a support ticket to let them know about that. Because I think if they all start hearing from all of us that we want and expect their products to be accessible, they're going to have to start listening and fixing things.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Just a few weeks ago, we had somebody that I think you'll probably know, Amber Hines, and she did a fairly long an exhaustive study of the different components that various page builders and block suites can bring to bear. So if you miss this one, it might be apropos to put that one in the queue as well, because it really does show you at this point. I think it was August 2025 we released that episode, or maybe about August. It shows you which of the companies have really tried hard at this moment. And there are definitely a few companies which are kind of leading the charge on making all of their tools as accessible as possible. So yeah, it's interesting. I think WordPress sometimes would definitely get in the way there. Okay, so I'm just going to move on to this other thing, this other resource that we've got, which is aardvarkaccessibility.com. And then, as I said earlier, it's /WCAG -plain-english. What's this? It's like a human readable set of, well, instructions for kind of everything, really. If you wrote this by hand, firstly, bravo. Secondly, when do you ever sleep?
So that wasn't just me. I had my team helping out with that as well. But yeah, we went through all of the success criteria that are part of WCAG. There are 78, I think, total WCAG 2.2. And just kind of wrote out, like, what is this? What does it mean? Who is impacted again? Because I think that part is important. And then how to implement it with some examples, with some very cute little illustrations, I think, that are throughout there. Yeah.
I mean, it basically runs through the whole smorgasbord of the accessibility. I'm going to say malaise, really, but do you know what I mean? The sort of the problems that you might encounter, they're really all there. And so I will drop the links into the show notes. I mean, you've just got to click around, really. There isn't a great deal of benefit in us describing what's going on in the audio podcast. But if you go through, you can click into... So it looks like you've just got this bunch of cards, but then in each card, there's a view details blue button, which will open an entirely new page. And that page will have, in many cases, hundreds and hundreds of words alerting you to what the problem is and how to, you can remediate those kind of things and what have you. So just, we're at kind of 35 minutes, so I'm keen to sort of wrap it up fairly soon. But just before we do that, I'm also keen to talk about the sort of legislative side of things. I'm guessing that although this isn't the ideal reason, one of the reasons that people are taking accessibility more and more seriously is because of the carrot and stick, the carrot being the kind of moral argument and the stick being the legal argument. And in the year 2025, we have the European Accessibility Act, although it doesn't appear at the minute to have a great deal in terms of teeth. You were telling me about some French company that has actually fallen foul of it and probably is going to regret what they have not done. So with that in mind, do you offer, I don't know, any kind of accreditation or certification or anything out the back end? So if I'm a subscriber and I go through all of the range of checks that you've got, is there something that I can print out or stick on the wall to say, look, we did it, or hand over to the client to say, look, we've begun the work. We can keep the legal people at bay for now.
Yeah, so there is no real certification of a website to say that it's accessible. That's just something that doesn't exist, and that kind of goes back to what I said earlier, where there's no such thing as a 100% accessible website. Even if you have tried very, very hard, somebody is going to come along and hit a barrier on that site. So one thing that you can do is something that is called a VPAT or an ACR, which would be you'd hire an accessibility professional to go through your site and write up a report on the state of accessibility on your site. The issue with that for websites is they're outdated as soon as you've made one change on your website. And websites change all the time. VPATs are from the time of installable software, where they could write a VPAT and give it to you with the disk, right? And it was good until you went and got a new disk.
Those are the days.
A new version. And so it's really outdated in the age of web apps and websites that just change all the time. What you do often need for the European Accessibility Act and for similar laws that are here in the US is what they would call due diligence, which is they're looking for some kind of proof that you have been working on improving the accessibility of your website over time.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you have proof of that, that yes, we're aware we have accessibility issues on our site. Here are the 50 we fixed last month. Here's the 30 that we're going to try to fix this month. And here's the proof that we've done that. That can really be helpful for you. So Aardvark provides that. We can provide reporting over time, and we have complete history tracking on all of the issues. It will say who opened it, who said it was fixed, when it was reopened. We'll have the whole history there, and you can comment on the issues. And so you have that you could present to show that this is something that you've been working on and making progress on.
So the current state of play is, you're kind of the best that you can do, really. There isn't a certificate to say we've done. The idea really is keeping a track of what you've been doing. And I guess as a sort of something in the background, so that if somebody was to come and, you know, they were trying to, force lawyers on you or something like that, you could say, look, here it is. Here's the evidence of what we've done. We've got this tool, and it has been keeping a track of all the different bits and pieces. And I guess the more you've done, the more likely you are to be left alone and so on. But you keep an activity log, for want of a better word, of the different bits and pieces that have been done. Is this tool then, are you kind of aiming this, I think you said it at the beginning, are you kind of aiming this squarely at the kind of the agency owner or the agency, not necessarily an agency owner? So is that kind of where you're targeting it? So not necessarily as the person who's got the one website, but more, I don't know, we're an agency, we've got 15, 20, 100, whatever it may be. Is that your target market?
Yeah, for sure. Because it's going to be really hard to keep track of accessibility across the whole portfolio of client sites. So we give you a way to do that, and then a way to identify and prioritize any accessibility issues that are on those sites. So if you're an agency owner, it's a great opportunity for selling a maintenance package where you can chip away at those accessibility issues every month.
Yeah. Okay. And do you have a way of kind of reporting to the client? My guess is that with the best will in the world, many clients probably kind of want to be left out of the loop of this kind of stuff. They would, you know, they want to know that it's been done, but not necessarily the minutiae of it. But nevertheless, it's a feather in your cap if you can do it. And some clients may wish to receive that kind of correspondence that, okay, we've tackled these things. We knew that we had 100 things to tackle and we've done 30 of them. Do you have that kind of telemetry as well?
Yeah. So if you have a client who really wants to be involved, we do have a client role that you can assign to a user that is read-only. They can't do anything except see what's in there. And then we also do have exportable PDF and CSV reports that you can give over to a client. And the PDFs can be customized with your own logo.
Okay. So I think we probably, I'll ask you the question. Do you think we've covered broadly what it is that you do, or is there any like obvious gaping hole that we never did tackle just then?
No, I think we got it.
Okay, that's perfect. In which case, the sort of thing which obviously everybody wants to know is how do you price this? What's the different bits and pieces? As you'll expect, you're going to go to the URL, which I've mentioned many times, /pricing. But do you just want to run through how it works?
Yeah, so it's priced based on the number of sites and pages that you want to scan. So it's not the number of pages in your website, but just the ones that you want to test. And we do have a free forever account that will let you scan with a home page of one website. And then if you want to add up to 100 pages, I think that's the $49 plan.
That's what it says. Yep, 100. Yep.
And then you can increase the number of sites and pages. And again, that number of pages is how many you're scanning and testing and not the total number of pages on your site.
I'll just quickly go through. So there's the free one and then 100 pages, $49, $99 for 1,000, 3,000 for 249, and it goes up and up and what have you. So you can sort of cherry pick the different bits and pieces that you'd want. One quick thing, which I forgot to ask, which has just occurred to me. Can I have this going on a sort of rotating basis? So is it possible for me to say, I don't know, because our site is a WordPress site and we know that there's an editorial team and they're constantly going in and they're constantly fiddling with things. Is it possible for us to revisit certain pages, I don't know, on a monthly basis, and other pages which are less likely to be fiddled with, maybe the contact form or something like that, we'll just do that once every 3 months? Is it possible basically to just automate the thing so it will keep me alert and I don't have to keep setting it up?
Yeah, so you can run a scan to run either every day or every week. And if you pick every week, you can choose the day of the week. It does scan the whole website and not just certain pages, but you can do that so that it's running automatically and it will send you a report if new issues are discovered so that you're alerted.
Okay, got it. So you can set it up on a weekly or a daily basis. Okay, that's it. In which case, one last little plug. So it's aardvarkaccessibility.com with triple A at the beginning, aardvarkaccessibility.com. Natalie McLeese, thank you very much for chatting to me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. That's all we've got time for this week. I hope that you enjoyed that. If you did, head to episode number 444 on the WPBuilds.com website. Drop us a comment there. We would really appreciate hearing what you thought about that particular episode. The WP Builds podcast is brought to you today by GoDaddy Pro. GoDaddy Pro, the home of managed WordPress hosting that includes free domain, SSL, and 24/7 support. Bundle that with the Hub by GoDaddy Pro to unlock more free benefits to manage multiple sites in one place, invoice clients, and get 30% off new purchases. Find out more at go.me/WPBuilds. We're also helped this week by Bluehost. Bluehost, redefine your web hosting experience with Bluehost Cloud, managed WordPress hosting that comes with lightning-fast websites, 100% network uptime, and 24/7 priority support with Bluehost Cloud. The possibilities are out of this world. Experience it today at bluehost.com/cloud. And we're also joined by Omnisend. Omnisend, do you sell your stuff online? Then meet Omnisend. Yes, that Omnisend, the email and SMS tool that helps you make $73 for every dollar spent. The one that's so good, it's almost boring. Hate the excitement of roller coaster sales? Prefer a steady line going up? Well, try Omnisend today. omnisend.com. And sincere thanks go to GoDaddy Pro, Bluehost and Omnisend for their ongoing support of the WP Builds podcast. Join them if you like, wpbuilds.com/advertise. Okay, that's pretty much it. I'm going to fade in some cheesy music in a minute, but before then, just a quick reminder, wpbuilds.com/black. If you want to discover some Black Friday deals, don't forget that. You can add your deal. And also, if you want to sponsor that page, you can certainly do that as well. Okay, I think that's pretty much it. I am going to now fade in that cheesy music. Say, stay safe. Have a good week. Bye-bye for now.